Hey listener, how you doing? Recording this after the fact, I had a great chat today with Zach Blair. Tour pro on the web.com tour, course designer, golf futurist. And we went through quite a lot of his stuff. I mention it in the recording, but I'll just clarify what was going on. I was using my time with Zach to do two things at once. I'm lucky enough to cover golf for a really big radio station here in Panama City, Panama. And I always like to get someone else on who's not me. So the first part of my recording with Zach is probably not very nerdy. But I tried to make it a bit more interesting than usual. Hey, how do you find Panama? What's the weather like? More interesting for the people who are listening to me, who are folks from Panama. And so we talk a tiny bit about Zach's experience in Panama. And then, quite brutally, I say, okay, we're done with the radio. Now let's talk golf. And we go into his project in Utah called the Buck Club, which he's going to talk about. We go into his experience of playing golf with Persimmon, with Blades, and then even with Hickory. It's been a really cool day for me. I love hanging out at tour events. It's great to have an opportunity to speak to someone like Zach, not only a player, but someone with something really interesting to say about the game and not afraid to voice his opinions, which are contrary to what the big golfing regulatory bodies and organizations are saying. And it's great. Often when you sit down with a tour pro, they just spout press lines. A lot of these guys are media trained, and you know, as soon as I finished talking to Zach, two guys from IMG, his management company, were straight in there. And you know, I've no idea how they feel about Zach's opinions about stuff. I think from their position, it's his angle. Is he something different? But I don't think he plays on that. There's talk about some golf pros like Bryson DeChambeau acting up to their persona. And I don't think Zach does that. I certainly didn't get that feeling from talking to him. And I've never had that feeling from seeing how he presents himself on social media. It's pretty easy to spot a press line or a management written statement. I think we're all these days quite discerning readers. And what that means is, if you are going to bullshit someone, it's obvious. And I feel like I missed the boat. I missed a trick with Zach. I wanted to ask him about junior golf and his experience and his opinions, and I forgot. Well, not that I forgot. I had the moment. You'll hear the conversation goes that way, and then the conversation moves on, and then we didn't get back to it. And it would have felt a little contrived to me. Well, that's what I thought in the moment, so I didn't create another opportunity. Maybe I'm showing my lack of skill as an interviewer here, but I just let it slide. But the reason I wanted to do that, part of the reason, is I wrote a blog on my own website, which has been dormant but not dead for a while. So if you go to www.impactgolf.net, you can see the blog I wrote about my opinions of junior golf, and I'd love to hear what you think after reading that. It was a dangerous one for me to put out there, because I know from the feedback I've had already, I've upset people. And that's fine, because it's my true voice. It's really what I think and what I feel. I think that's enough. I don't want to keep you guys waiting for what is a real treat of a conversation. It's about 30 minutes long. I'm going to take a moment to listen through to the podcast, recording again now, and then vibe off that to wrap up this episode of Golf Notes with Guy Cross. Here's Zach. Here at Club de Golf Panama for the web.com tournament, I'm sitting in front of Zach Blair. Zach, how are you doing?
Good, how are you doing?
I'm doing great. I'm worn out because I walked one hole of golf with you. And how you find out this?
Yeah, we played the back nine today. It was good. Course is in good shape. And, you know, I think it's going to be firm and fast, which will be fun. And, yeah, hoping for some good weather.
A lot of people come to Panama with expectations, you know, the weather or the culture. I know you've been here a whole 24 hours. How's it living up to your expectations?
Yeah, it's my second trip down here. I played a PGA Tour Latin America event somewhere down here. I can't remember where it was, but no, it's good. We had a good dinner last night. Course was good today, and sun's out, so it's pretty good.
Where did you eat last night?
El Gaucho.
Gaucho steak.
Yeah.
No, it's a classic Panama place.
Yeah, it was good.
You with players or you know people down there?
Me and Casey Wittenberg are shacking up together, so we went out to eat last night. It was good.
And you staying in the hotel?
We're staying at the Marriott, kind of down the street from the host hotel.
Ah, yeah, nice place.
Yeah, it's good.
So you've 24 hours, you've been to Gauchos, you've played some golf. Have you had plans to see anything else of Panama?
Today's kind of our really only day off, so we'll kind of see what happens this afternoon. Probably go out, you know, somewhere in the city and find something to do.
I'm going to recommend Casco Viejo, the old town.
Okay.
It's just kind of everything you want colonial Central America to be.
Perfect.
Tiny, narrow streets. But, you know, it's developed, so there's some cool places to eat and drink.
Yeah.
And I really enjoy hanging out there. It's a nightmare to drive in and out of, but I presume you guys are in Uber, so...
Yeah, no, that'll be easy, thank you.
You won't have that problem. So, briefly, can you explain to me what the web.com tour is, and why is that something folks don't hear about on TV?
So basically, it's like the feeder tour, the developmental tour for the PGA Tour. So you basically have to play a year out here to qualify for the PGA Tour. So obviously not as well known as the big tour, but it would be like minor league baseball or, you know, I don't really know a better comparison than that.
No, I think you nailed it. Minor league baseball is really good. And you said you played in the Latin America PGA Tour, which is a rung down. Now, I'm British, so I have no idea what the baseball comparison of the PGA Latin America is. Cause
yeah, so, I mean, it would be the same thing. So in, like...
a lower minor league.
Yeah, players. So in minor league baseball, you have, like, AAA, AA, and single A. And so, you know, it would be the step below the web.com tour, I guess. So it's kind of a feeder tour into the web.com tour.
And do you watch much golf as a fan?
Yeah, I do. Yeah, I love golf, kind of everything about it. Love playing, love watching it. Grew up watching Tiger and everything like that. So, you know, anytime he's kind of in the mix, it's always fun to pop on the TV and see what he's got to do.
I always try and get people to come out here to watch the web.com on a Sunday, because it kind of makes sense. What do you think would bring people out here to watch?
I think just the fact, you know, it's a beautiful place. Course is in really good shape, and you'll get to see a lot of high-quality golf. So if you're a fan and you want to see that, I think it's a perfect place. Not huge crowds out here, so you definitely can kind of pick and choose who you want to go watch, and you're always going to get a pretty good seat. So.
And apart from Mr. Zach Blair, who should these guys go and watch?
Oh, man, there's a lot of good players out here. Too many to name, but...
None of them are going to hear this, so...
Yeah, honestly, I'm not really too sure. It's kind of a crapshoot, right? It's whoever's playing good. I would go out and watch the leaders, because they're probably obviously playing the best golf.
So that'll be you.
Exactly, yeah. That's the plan.
Well, that's great. And just thinking, right, radio done. So we've done, we're using one recording. I'm going to explain this for the podcast because you can on a podcast. One recording for two purposes. The first few minutes of that was for live radio-ish, where it's going out on radio in a live situation, but I'm recording it. I messed that up. In Panama City. And then we're going to just flow straight into a podcast. Now, Zach, for folks like me, and as I said before we recorded you, the golf nerds, I think most people would know you. I mean, as a web.com player, most guys have got a handle on what's going on the web tour. And then through how you've promoted the Buck Club on social media. But not everyone will know about the Buck Club.
Yeah.
So what's the elevator pitch on that?
Yeah, basically the easiest way to describe it is kind of a classic golf club that's all about golf for, you know, basically for golf junkies or golf nerds, kind of like me and you. Trying to build it in Utah, don't really have any places that fit that mold. And being a big fan of golden age architecture and just the classic golf courses, definitely want to bring something like that to where I live.
So you've used a couple of terms there. I'm just going to get you to unpack. You said a golf venue that's kind of pure golf.
Yeah.
As opposed to what?
You know, I would say the last, you know, 30 or 40 years, I guess, golf kind of got into more about stretching it out, real estate, kind of building a place just to sell homes and stuff like that. So it wasn't really just about the golf, you know. I don't think they were focused on making the best golf holes or the best layout they could. It was more about, you know, how can we make the most money?
Yeah, I guess designing a golf course around the houses, the houses being the priority.
Yeah, exactly.
And seeing what we can do with the land in between.
Yeah, yeah, so we're kind of like the complete opposite of that. You know, don't expect any houses out there and just kind
of... Tennis courts?
Probably not, no. No, it's going to be mostly all about golf. You know, there's some fishing, there's a nice river up there, and, you know, expect maybe some sporting clays. Going off in the winter when there's snow on the ground, but
yeah, because you simply need something to do when you can't play golf.
Yeah, exactly. So there's other things to do, but the main priority is about the golf.
I think it sounds fantastic, and through another podcast, I mean, like, it's clearly through No Laying Up, I heard.
Yeah,
you're more than a name on a leaderboard. I just read up for the property in Utah. I said there was two things I wanted to say, and one wasn't quite right for live radio. You said firm and fast, and I said on the property. Yeah. Let's see how many more golf cliches you can get in.
Exactly.
I think you should play firm and fast bingo when watching like the British Open or something.
Yeah.
And I said the British Open then, very intentional. Yeah, just, you know, a drinking game on how many times you say firm and fast. It's the wind that keeps the par. There's a few, I mean, there's other sort of more famous ones, like cameras don't quite show how dark it is out here.
Yeah.
So, the Buck Club sounds amazing. And what, as someone, I don't want to say OCD, but who enjoys the detail of things, you've gone deep. And almost in a... say this with respect, and it's a tiny criticism, like, you haven't got a golf course, you've got a really cool logo.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, how it all really started was just kind of like an idea, and then I have some friends that make hats and stuff like that, and they were like, oh, we should make some hats.
Yeah.
And we started wearing them, and people obviously loved the logo straight away, so we kind of went into this whole guerrilla marketing scheme of, you know, kind of promoting the course and the idea that way, and I mean, it took off. I mean, I don't know too many other places that don't exist yet that have the following. that this course does.
And you've got a baseball cap, a money holder. What do you have a cool name for it?
Yeah, like a valuables pouch.
Yeah,
we got everything.
Tees,
flags. Shirts, flags. Yeah, we run a couple little golf events, so we made some stuff for that. So it's been cool to see people kind of fall in love with it.
And I have to admit, through you, no laying up, the Friday, and that kind of clique of podcasts, I've got some new bucket lists. Obviously, top of the bucket list is the vaporware golf course, that is the butt club.
Yeah.
But then, Sweden's, I mean, like so many boxes are ticked, and I barely read a word about nine hole golf.
Yeah.
I love it. I grew up on it. It's public as well.
Yeah.
Nine hole public golf. High quality, like well maintained.
Yeah.
Enthusiast run. Nine hole golf that's open to the public.
Yeah.
This is like porn to my golf ears. It doesn't, you know. You guys who played persimmon around there?
We played a persimmon round. We hit some persimmons around there during the golf event we have. We kind of have like a persimmon long drive or a hickory long drive. So we've done some cool stuff.
Two worlds are colliding here for me.
Yeah.
So I'd been putting together a bag of golf clubs that I couldn't afford when I was a kid. I'm 41, so we're talking like 90s clubs.
Yeah.
And one of them was a Tadmore putter, because okay. Ian Woosnam used a Tadmore putter when he won the Masters in 91. And just last year, I found one I really like. And it's a handmade one, not one of his Max Lively putters.
Yeah.
But he's big on the hickory clubs.
Yeah.
And I've been tempted to try and get hold of at least one, but how is it to play? How is it to play hickory?
Yeah, it's awesome. The first time I ever did it was a couple of years ago. Me and the No Laying Up guys went down to Australia, and our host out at Royal Melbourne, on the East course, took us out to play hickories, and it was like super eye-opening and so much fun. And immediately, like after two holes, we were all just like, man, we gotta start doing this more.
Really? So how, I mean, if you were, I'm trying to think of a standard shot, 125 yards out, you've got a wedge in your hand. That's a pretty generic shot for golfers of almost all abilities.
Cause yeah.
It could be a 46 degree or a 60 degree.
Yeah.
How's that in hickory world?
Yeah, so, you know, you only play with seven clubs.
Yeah.
So I'm not really sure like what the names are, but like when we played at Royal Melbourne, like they don't have numbers on any of them, you know.
They've got names.
Yeah, so like a Mashy or a Mashy Niblick or.
Do you know
jigger.
What they mean or?
Not really.
Good.
Luckily,
I'm really glad.
Our host was kind of like, all right, this is kind of what you want to hit from here, like, you know, use this, and they, it's pretty cool the way it works when you get like real old clubs like that, because you don't really just necessarily go and buy a set,
because
they're all so different. You kind of gotta test things out and see what you like, and you might get one from here, and you might get this club, and then you just kind of mix and match a set together, and it's just really cool, actually.
I miss that again. It's almost missing from junior golf.
Yeah.
I don't know how you started, but my parents had no money. They bought like four golf clubs for me, and I'm not saying I was savvy or anything, but you know, I had like a mix and match bag of half set of clubs. And I remember like going to my dad going, I really need a pitching wedge.
Yeah.
And he just came home with a pitching wedge. And I can tell you everything about that club.
Yeah.
Golf Pipe Victory Titleist Model 90 with a true temper shaft.
Yeah.
Because that's how we, for me, that's how I love the game, and like almost all of my first bag of golf clubs, I can tell you everything about. But having to pick club by club what you put in a hickory bag just reminded me of the joy.
Yeah,
I got a new golf club.
Yeah, it's really cool. I haven't been able to really put enough time into it to go find club by club a set. Luckily, Louisville Golf's, you know, been really cool with all of us and hooked us up with, you know, stuff for the tournament that we have out at Sweetens, and but it's a lot of fun. It's so much different than equipment and modern golf that it's really refreshing to go out, hit cool, good shots with those clubs.
And what golf balls did you use?
So we had like Bellatas and...
From the 90s?
Yeah, and like Titleist, Pro Trad balls.
Mm. They're Bellata as well, aren't they? I remember that.
Yeah, yeah, so... Those are what we usually try and use, but with the like with the new ones, like the Louisville Golf reproductions, you can hit Pro Vs or whatever with them. But it's obviously more fun to go out and play like a Bellata or a professional. Something.
No, I've got a dozen Bellata. Like,
yeah,
and I've got so I'd play the Bellata if I had a chance, but I've got some Dunlop 65i in paper, so they came in like a tube, like toilet paper, and then each one was wrapped in paper.
Yeah.
I feel like I should give them to my grandkids or something, and they can put a down payment on a McDonald's with them in 50 years' time.
Perfect.
Yeah, Hickory Golf is fascinating, because Persimmon Golf, I think maybe it's a step closer, because the Persimmon clubs, like, you can go into almost any thrift store and pick up some beaten-up old wooden clubs and have fun with them.
Yeah.
And for how much thrift store golf clubs cost, $50, and you've got your choice of the whole world.
Yeah, absolutely.
Hickory's something I'd like to explore. But then, the next question, logically, if the gear's so much older, how did you get on a full-size golf course playing Hickory, or Persimmon, or anything?
Yeah, some of those like old golf courses, it's perfect. You know, you'll see some of these bunkers that you're kind of like, you know, that bunkers are relevant with modern equipment. And why is it even there? And then you'll go out with some Hickories or Persimmons, and you'll quickly figure out like, wow, that's why those are there. So it's fun. It's very satisfying playing well, because the quality of golf that you have to play with those clubs is so much higher than kind of modern day equipment.
And what sort of score were you shooting?
The first time I played at Royal Melbourne, none of us had ever played.
Yeah, sure. No judgment here.
Yeah, so my goal was to break 80, and I actually shot even.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, so...
Off the tips?
Yeah.
That's
and
sick.
But it's... Royal Melbourne East is a short little course. I mean, it's perfect for Hickories.
Sort of 6,000, 6,200.
Yeah, something like that. So I've never played with the Hickories anywhere like huge. I played with them at Cypress one time.
Cypress is a pretty serious golf course.
It's short though. And we played with them at, me and Andy from the Fried Egg played with them at San Francisco Golf Club.
I don't know that one. And
that was perfect for it too. You know, there's a bunch of bunkers out there that you just fly with the new drivers, but with the Hickories you had to kind of worry about hitting it pretty good.
So, and something I've seen you or people mention about you is we're talking about old tech versus new tech. How do you feel the future of golf should go? Do you think there should be changing the rules to limit tour pros hitting the ball crazy far?
I do, and the reason why I say that is like my dad played out on tour, and just the way things are going right now, the distance from the disparity from where the shortest hitter on tour hits it compared to the longest hitter hits it is so much bigger than it was, you know, 30 years ago. You know, back then it was 40 yards maybe. Now, you know, you're seeing guys hit it 375, 380, and, you know.
Yeah, you've got guys averaging 320. That means this, that's the average.
Yeah, so I mean, like I was watching the golf last week and down in Phoenix, and guys hitting it, you know, 60 yards from the 18th hole. You know, I'm hitting 7-iron into that hole. So I think it's gotten to where...
And you hit the ball, you won't be the shortest hitter out here this week.
Yeah, I'll be close. You know,
you
I've always been right on the bottom. But to me, it's not, you know, it's not me crying and saying like, oh, you know, I don't think it's fair that this person hits it further than me. I think what the biggest thing is golf has kind of lost that a whole skill set of like iron play and long iron.
Yeah.
You know, those big hitters, if you brought them out to, you know, really, honestly, any course, they're going to hit driver wedge to 75% of the par fours. And it's like, you know, when guys like Jack and Arnold Palmer and, you know, even the era before
and
him.
Both of those guys could move the ball 300 if they needed to.
Yeah,
I mean, on the right conditions.
Yeah, but I mean, those guys, you look back and they have charts of what clubs they were hitting into holes week in and week out. And, you know, there was a big percentage of those clubs were, you know, 6, 5, 4, 3 irons and, you know, 5 woods. And you just don't see that in the modern game. And I think that's the biggest problem with where golf is going, is you're losing an entire skill set that isn't being asked anymore.
It's not being asked of the tour pro because...
Yeah, exactly.
1800. I mean, no, I'm a club pro. I shoot about par off normal tees on a normal golf course.
Yeah.
Like kind of the better half of most club pros.
Yeah.
I fly my driver 250 on a good day. But I out hit almost every amateur I play with.
Yeah.
Like, top 1%, of course not, but...
Yeah. And I think that, again, I mean, that's what I'm trying to say is, you know, everyone wants to say that they don't want to change the rules because amateurs play the same game as the pros. But in all reality, those people don't know what they're talking about because it is a completely different game. And that's why I think that if you bifurcated, it would bring the game closer to what an average Joe is out playing on the weekend compared to like a professional golfer.
And I experienced that firsthand just before Christmas. We're in the first few days of February now. I gave a playing lesson to a beginner, and so we played off reds.
Yeah.
But cheekily, like any naughty club pro, I hadn't played for a few days, so I really fancied 18 holes, so I just joined in and played.
Yeah.
And that gave me a taste of what it's like to be a tour pro.
Yeah.
Because I'm, let's say, 20, 30, 40 yards further down the track. So on that course, there's one hole where the a par three is a 230-yard carry off the back tee. So serious par three.
Yeah.
But off red tees, it's 170.
Yeah.
That's the difference.
Yeah, exactly.
60 yards.
Yeah.
Because a lot of the guys here at this web event will be able to fly the ball 300 without really thinking about it.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I can fly the ball 240 without really thinking about it.
Yeah.
That's 60 yards. I mean, I think I was 500 for that day.
Yeah.
You know, hey, I got the ball in the hole 500 par. I don't care what tees I'm on. I enjoyed my game of golf that day.
Yeah.
But I know I was cheating.
Yeah, that's how, that, you know, that's really kind of what golf is morphing into. And, you know, some people think it's fine and others, you know, would like to see it dialed back a little bit. And I don't know. I think it's a sport that people watch for entertainment, so they want to see good scores, obviously. But I don't think scores would... It's not like people would all of a sudden start shooting 75. You know, you'd still be seeing your good scores. You'd just... A different skill set would be asked by the players, and they would get good at it. So I don't think it would be that big of a deal, honestly.
So I'm aware of your time.
No, we're fine.
But I'm aware, I've got a friend who's a cool guy. He's an online friend. amateur golfer, played off 18, decided golf coaching was terrible. But he was a professional, like, corporate trainer. So
yeah.
I'm going to be the best golf coach I can be.
Yeah.
And he certainly counts. He's in the conversation of guys I know. And he said to me, no one listens to a golf podcast who doesn't want to get better at golf. So you've got to put that in every podcast you do.
Yeah.
So just thinking about what we spent the last, let's say, 15 minutes talking about, your experience of playing on the web.com tour and the LATAM to a lesser extent means that you're always the one of the shorter hitters here. And that's very similar to Joe Golfer playing off competition tees off the club. They're always just in that irksome, I'm hitting 5-iron in and those guys who are a bit longer than me are hitting 8-iron, or I'm hitting a hybrid in and they're hitting 6-iron. You must feel that a lot, no?
Yeah, no, for sure.
With that in mind then, how do you manage that in your game? And then, because that's going to translate to a regular golfer.
Yeah, I would say, you know, you obviously have to practice your longer irons a little bit more than, you know, maybe other people. But, I mean, I think the easiest way to help an amateur golfer out or someone that's trying to get better is to basically just tell them to club up on every shot, one club. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, my experience out here and my experience playing with amateurs and pro-ams and everything from all my years, I mean, you rarely see an amateur golfer hit it past the hole with any shot. Besides, like, you know, if they're going to, like, skull it or something like that, you know, you see it go by occasionally then. But, you know, it seems like they always try and base their shot off that perfect shot they hit, you know, one time in their life. You know, if you got a 9-iron in, they're thinking back on that one time they hit that 9-iron 140 yards or whatever. So I think just club up a little bit, swing easy instead of trying to kill it, and just make good contact.
I think that's really good advice. A lot of my work with students on playing lessons is around realistic expectations. I think if you've got a golfer, in the UK we call it category one, sort of 5 handicap and down.
Yeah.
Their ball striking isn't going to be a million miles away from most pros.
Yeah.
The way they approach the game is, but the actual ball striking.
Absolutely.
And with those guys, you can say, okay, play for your best shot. If you've got a wedge in hand, if you just nail it, it's going to fly 130, pretty straight, you play for that shot. But for the rest of the guys, category is 2, 3, 4.
Yeah.
Okay, if you smoke that wedge, it's going to be 130.
Yeah.
And if you've got a massive lake or something, 130, no, don't hit that, it's the wrong shot. But generally, you're not going to smoke that wedge.
Yeah.
You're going to half chunk it, and it's going to fly 110. And if you've got a bunker to fly at 110, you've got to bear that in mind.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I guess for us better golfers, we have that attitude, but the margins are much smaller.
Yeah.
You may fly your 7-iron, I'm going to say 170. But if there's something at 168, you might be like, just
that's
cautious.
Kind of, that's always the thing you got to kind of watch out for is, you know, some of the best players, it just seems like they never make those mistakes, right? It's just, it's if they've got a bunker to fly that's 168 and they hit their 7-iron 170, they're just going to club up one and knock it 15 feet by, and if they miss hit it, they hit it tight, and the bunker's always out of play.
And because most people would say a club is roughly, 10-yard difference club per club. Even if that guy went a full club by, they've got a 30-footer coming back for birdie.
Yeah.
It's not great, but I take that on every hole on the golf course.
It's better than the bunker shot that you probably only get up and down, you know, tour pro, the best, only get it up and down 75% of the time. You know, an average golfer's probably in the 15 to 20% range.
I don't practice bunker shots.
Yeah.
I haven't got time.
Yeah, I know. Everyone always asks, you know, I've been a fairly good chipper and putter and bunker player and everything, and all my friends, when I go play with them, they always ask, like, "God, you know, how are you so good?" And it's like, well, I practice a lot, you know.
Yeah.
You have a normal job, like, you I'm not good at accounting, like, but if I practiced as much as you work, I might be okay.
If I put 40 hours a week into Microsoft Excel, I'd be really good at it.
Exactly. Yeah, so I mean, that's another area in golf that you have to have expectations about, is if you want to get better, you have to put some time into it and work at it, and that's just how it goes.
Zach, thank you so much for your time. It's been great to chat. Go crazy low.
Thank you.
All those things that the kids say to each other this week. Thank you so much.
No
Cheers.
Worries. Thank you.
Thanks again to Zach for giving me half an hour of his time.
I'm recording this on Wednesday, just before the web.com event here in Panama starts. And so I really hope Zach does go crazy low. And it's fun to kind of be part of his story for this tournament. So I'm definitely going to head up tomorrow and try and catch him for a few holes and see how he's going. And I don't know, I kind of feel like he might see a friendly face in the crowd and that will make him a little happier. And that's a good thing, right? Next up on the podcast, I'm not 100% sure who I've got next, but I've mentioned it previously. I've got Marcus Putter, Marcus Potter, the putting coach, and he's gone from zero to hero. He started off just sharing what he knows about putting on Instagram. Then his buddy, Cody Blick, started out doing well on the PGA Canada tour. Then he's now got his web card. And so it's going to be great to talk to Marcus. He's picking up a lot of tour players. And yeah, it's cool that I've got the access to him to pick his brain about putting. And yeah, let's see what we can learn, what information we can leech from his brain that's going to make our games better. Plus, he's got a cool story in the game himself. Not just cool stories about other people. Barney, I want you on the podcast. You better listen. I'm going to tell you to listen. And I want you to make us all better golfers with your genius that you've brought to the game. Robin, I'm going to flag my podcast as dirty and get you on. That's Robin Matthews-Williams. I've got some other guys on the periphery of my podcast. Michael from Mach3 Training. We're all going to learn to hit the ball further after a chat from him. And learn about how to do that in a way that we can put into practice without going on his course. But I want to give the guy a chance to sell his course because, and I'm going to be honest here, I'm thinking of becoming a kind of trainer for him. Or learning if that's possible. And yeah, I want to see what makes his system special. Because I've seen a lot of videos and I've spoken to a lot of guys informally who says his speed training system makes hitting the golf ball further easier. So that's the podcast. If you've liked what you've listened, do check me out on YouTube. Just look for Impact Golf. Look for the ginger guy in a baseball cap talking about golf in a really nerdy way. Check me out on Instagram, ImpactGolfNet. I think probably I use Instagram more than anything because somehow I connect with the way that works and I find it fun. I guess partially because a lot of the guys I enjoy talking with online about golf are on Instagram, so that's kind of where we hang out. I'm on Facebook as well, and I do have an Impact Golf page, but you know, right now, just add me as me, Guy Cross. Right now, I'm standing behind some wall with a graffiti behind me and a Dirty Bird Golf t-shirt on. Shout out to Dirty Bird Golf. I really don't feel the need right now to hide behind some sort of corporate profile page. That may change, but if you've listened to this podcast, boom, you're in. I think that's it. Oh, and like I said, do check out my blog, www.impactgolf.net. I spouted off about junior golf, had some feedback. Some people are not happy. So that's awesome. Find out why by reading the article. Yeah. All in all, we've had a good podcast. Enjoy yourselves. Play great golf.